This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 21, Episode 7. This is Writing Excuses.
Deep dive with her serpent locks.
Tools, not rules.
For writers, by writers.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Lan.
I'm Marshall.
I'm Erin.
And we are very happy that Marshall has joined us. He's usually on the other side of the microphone, being our engineer. But today is my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
I often think about this as leveling up day. I am now a level 57 human.
I love that.
It makes me feel powerful in a way that I'm 57 years old does not. Because then I can think about the new gear that I get and the tools that I get. And for my birthday, one of the things that I often do is I do what I call a party favor, which is that I post one of my stories, but then I also talk about some aspect of it. Sometimes I show you a first draft. And in this case, we're going to talk about this story through the things we've been talking about with beginnings, some of the things we're going to be talking about with beginnings. And I'm also going to talk about some ways in which this story shows me leveling up. So this is on Uncanny. It's called With Her Serpent Locks. My friends have read this story.
Mm-hmm.
Before I tell you where it came from, I would love to just see what your first initial thoughts of it were.
I really loved it. It's really fun, even though it comes from a place of like, you know, there's definitely like teeth to the story, right? Like the snakes have a bite. And I really enjoyed seeing that unfold, but I like the way in which the emotion of it is kind of sublimated. Like there's the irritation, but it's all filtered through this very like, I'm going about my day. I'm keeping my cool. I'm just like doing the things that comfort me. And it sort of has all these sensory grounding things, but you can feel the simmering rage underneath it that's going to end up where it ends up. I really liked that emotional tenor, and it made it a very like pleasant story to read, even though it is coming from a place of like, fuck this.
I agree. Especially when I got to the end, it just felt like subtly diabolical. Like she's just going about, like Dong Wan said, going about the day, but like there was some planning going on and there was some anger. And then the execution at the end was just, it was very satisfying by the time we got to the end.
Yeah. I really was thinking about it in the context of like some of what we've been talking about recently about beginnings and openings. So I really, the end is great, but like was thinking about like how it works. And one thing I found really interesting is it's based in mythology that I'm aware of, which is something we didn't talk about, which is something that, like, you can ground a story in a broader context than like even the context that, like, you know, which it's not 100% required, but this is a fairly well-known myth, like the Medusa and the turning people into stone. And so it was really cool to kind of uncover what was happening on both a personal level for the character who I was not familiar with, but like where it fits into my broader understanding of the myth, which is a fun way to ground and also makes me feel clever, which we talked about in previous episodes,
mm-hmm.
which is because I'm like, oh, this is that. And then it's a little more explicit right after that. And so I'm like, I figured it out before it was told to me, which was something really fun that I enjoyed.
Yeah. And even in the way where I was like, oh, right, I don't really remember this part of the myth. Like, I remember Medusa was like one of the Gorgons, but I don't remember who the rest of them were, what the setup was, or even exactly how she died. You know, I remember the Harryhausen, you know,
right,
like
sure,
version
yeah.
of it. But it didn't feel necessary, right? I got the pieces I needed to get. I remembered the vibe of the thing more. And so I think that's the thing where, like, you don't have to worry too much about referentiality so long as you're not, like, expecting me to remember every single detail of the thing. It's like, okay, I know what the Medusa is. I know what a Gorgon is.
Yeah, the title, and then getting to that first break, the stone of back of a man huddled on the ground. I was like, oh,
yeah.
I see what's happening.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, that is sick. I like that. But we were talking about grounding the reader a bit, but what I thought was kind of cool is grounding these gods with this kind of technology too. Like how does a god get from, how is a god trying to escape their family? And then how are they communicating across time and space? And then dude has to take a ship over. Like, I just thought, mm-hmm. I just thought that was a really cool touch. Like the wormhole, the relay station. I just thought that was a cool way to like kind of ground gods into sci-fi story.
Why make it science fiction? Like what was behind that choice?
Okay. So,
now we
talk about evolution of a story. So I run this thing called a short story cohort. And one of the things we do at the beginning of the cohort is I check in with people. I'm like, barriers to writing victories. And one of the people, as a barrier to writing, said she had a lot of stuff going on with her family. And she just felt like her brain was full of angry snakes. Huh. And one of the things that I always say is, you know, when you're having a big emotion, try to lean into it, whether it's giving the character that emotion and then helping them pivot away from it, or leaning even farther into it. And so that day for the writing prompt, I said, our writing prompt is angry snakes. And so what I wrote down, I saved this. What I wrote down was angry snakes. And then the next thing I told them to do was to set some intentions, that they should set a couple of things that if they accomplished those, they would feel satisfied by the end of the day, and the lowest bars possible. So the things I set were start a new story, decide where, who, and what the problem was. That was it. And so I was like, decide where. I'm like, backyard on a planet with rings. That was like the sum total of what I wrote down. Who? Medusa's sister. Problem? Zeus wants to visit. Like that was what I wrote. And then this is one of those stories where I got lucky. I talk about this sometimes where you get lucky and you kind of cough a story out. I got most of this story during that 2-hour block of writing. Not all of it. There were pieces that I was like, I have to fix that. But the opening line of the story was not originally the message from Zeus. It was originally the message hung in the air. It was the second line was where mm-hmm. I started.
Okay.
And my very first take was it was actually going to be Medusa. And then I went over and I was like, let me just check on Medusa. Like, what are some things? I remember, again, she has some sisters. She's dead. So who else is around? And that was when I learned that the Gorgons, some of them were immortal and some were not.
Mm-hmm.
And also I was like, there's got to be a star named after, mm-hmm. you know, like mm-hmm. all of the other things. And indeed there is, that like, I didn't make up the name of I made up the idea that there's a planet that's habitable there, but I'm like, okay, so you've got immortal gods. That means if we go into science fiction, they should still be around theoretically, unless someone has killed them. And that was kind of where I started. But I didn't know the ending when I started. Mm. I knew that I wanted a confrontation between the two of them. I knew that she was dealing with grief. I knew that she hated this asshole because, I mean, really, Zeus is like rotten. And the other thing that I knew as I was going was that I wanted to play with form, because I tend to do this fairly immersive kind of, I don't tend to be flashy. And so the idea of doing this thing where Uriel is just doing the why, the where, the question words as my transitions was really appealing to me, and trying to do these very condensed scenes that were doing a lot of lift, but actually not a lot happens in, also very appealing to me, that it's this correspondence between the two of them. But at the end, by the time I got to the end, that final scene, I knew what was going to happen to Zeus. I knew that she had taken steps, but I had to go back and plant some of that stuff. I had to go back and plant the basil lily or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I had to go back and plant some of that stuff so that it was there. I think she was originally cutting a lemon instead of a pomegranate. And I'm like, it's a Greek myth. What are you doing?
Well, and cutting a pomegranate is such a good sensory detail.
Yeah.
It's such an involved task. It takes these different steps and there's all this technique involved. I don't know. And it's just this beautiful, red, luscious image.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But one of the other things that I was trying to do to level up is something that I will talk to you about after the break, because it's about delaying information.
It's the start of a new year, and that's a time where lots of us, I certainly do, step back and consider the systems we use and if there's a way to make things smoother, more efficient, or just easier. And if you're running a small business, a simple solution for payroll, benefits, and HR, like Gusto, lets you start your year off on the right foot. Gusto is online payroll and benefit software built for small businesses. It's all-in-one, remote-friendly, and incredibly easy to use. So you can pay, hire, onboard, and support your team from anywhere. Automatic payroll tax filing, simple direct deposits, health benefits, commuter benefits, workers' comp, 401k... You name it, Gusto makes it simple and has options for nearly every budget. It's quick and simple to switch. Just transfer your existing data to get up and running fast. Plus, don't pay a cent until you run your first payroll. Try Gusto today at gusto.com/WX and get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. That's 3 months of free payroll at gusto.com/WX. One more time. gusto.com/WX. If you've been stuck on a 6-month wait list for a psychiatrist or are bouncing between online mental health sites trying to find medication support, Talkiatry was built for you. It's virtual psychiatry that actually fits your life and your insurance. It's a 100% online psychiatry practice that provides comprehensive evaluations, diagnoses, and ongoing medication management for conditions like ADHD, anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, and more. Unlike therapy-only apps, Talkiatry is psychiatry. That means you're seeing a medical provider who can diagnose mental health conditions and prescribe medication when it's appropriate. All their 600-plus clinicians are in-network with major insurers, so you can use your existing insurance instead of paying monthly subscriptions or out-of-network fees. You'll meet with an experienced, licensed psychiatrist who takes the time to understand what's going on, builds a personalized treatment plan, and can prescribe medication when it's right for you. Your care stays consistent and evidence-based. Getting started with Talkiatry takes just a few minutes. Complete a short online assessment, get matched with clinicians who fit your needs, and schedule your first visit in days, not months. More than 300,000 patients have already found high-quality psychiatric care through Talkiatry. Head to talkiatry.com/WX and complete the short assessment to get matched with an in-network psychiatrist in just a few minutes. That's talkiatry.com/WX to get matched in minutes.
Where I live, the new year brings colder days. Regardless of my New Year's resolutions, my wardrobe should resolve to keep me cozy. And thanks to Quince, it's doing just that. A couple of months back, I picked up a plush cotton crewneck sweater for $50, and it is still my favorite. I have other sweaters, but this is the one I reach for. Quince can bundle you up in more than just sweaters. They've got down jackets, wool coats, Italian leather outerwear that's warm on the inside, even when it's really cold outside. Each piece is made from premium materials by trusted manufacturers that meet rigorous standards for craftsmanship and ethical production. By partnering directly with these folks, Quince provides top-quality clothing at a fraction of the price of luxury brands. Refresh your winter wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/WX for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/WX. Free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/WX.
So before the break, I said that one of the leveling up things that I played with was delaying information. And one of the pieces of information that I was very deliberately delaying was the word Zeus. And also that, yes, this really is a Gorgon, and all of the commentary about her hair is not metaphor. It's like I've got Greek myth mashed with, but that's actually a pretty hard thing to do. It's not something that I would have been able to do when I was a beginning writer. And it's one of the things that I felt like I had more control over. So I am curious about how that played for you and what you see as the tricks I was using to be able to do that, or anything else you want to talk about there.
Well, you mentioned the hair not being a metaphor, or not being, you know what I mean? And something that was actually happening.
Yeah.
And I think I started to kind of figure that out when she sat down and one of them was like, bit the chair behind her, and she just was kind of doing something with it. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. These are actually snakes responding as she's feeling things. And I was like, okay, that's really cool. And then that, I was trying to remember the other spot. She just didn't want any more statues haunting her house. Mm-hmm. That line, I love that line, because now I'm imagining all of these people coming there and her just being like, okay, now you're stone. Sorry, bro.
Yeah.
You know, and I just thought that was cool. So that connection of the hair and that image, and then Zeus shows up, I just thought that was really well done.
I love the pattern also you set up of the who, what, when, where, why. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just the single word questions, which you like hang a lantern on, because she's like, I'm being deliberately annoying by just saying one word. But then it leads to the who, right? And so I think it's just like fun to set up a pattern that is going to resolve in that way, and resolve in the other thing of like, I was like, it's probably Zeus. You know what I mean? I like had a sense of like, there's plenty of gods in the Greek pantheon that are complete assholes. But you know, there was something about it that I was like, I wonder if it's gonna be Zeus. And then it was, which was very satisfying.
I think one thing I found really interesting was at the end of the first paragraph after the spoken line or the hanging in the air message, was about the asshole favorite grandson who got away with rape and murder and incest, which is interesting because her reaction to that is very blasé, which to me speaks like something is going on beyond what you're expecting, because like, you know, it's not like she's like, and I will alert the authorities to this, or like, you know, it's just sort of like, oh, this is just like a known thing. Mm-hmm. It's happened this again, which is something that is very, I was like, well, what's going on with that guy? Like, that seems messed up. Like,
yeah, why is nobody doing anything about
this? Why is nobody? I feel like somebody should be like handling this.
Tell somebody.
Yeah.
Weirdly, it's very outsized, right? Because like, you know, I don't think any of us know someone who's that terrible.
Yeah.
But I do think a lot of us have someone in our family that's a little bit like, ugh, like that person more than they're like, you don't, it's also like, I'm not clear on how bad of a person they are, but maybe they're not like perfect. You know what I mean? Or just like, maybe it's just like a little bit, but that exasperation and discomfort with somebody you're connected to in your circle that you can't quite get away from is, I think, a really, really relatable feeling, right? And so I think setting that up as like the grounding emotion is really helpful there.
Awesome. I'm going to point back to a thing that you said when you were talking about setting up the pattern of the who, where, what, that I had to switch. I remember having to switch something, one of the wheres of the one of them, in order to get the beats to hit right. But at the very, very end, I also deliberately, where would you like to be? I also deliberately gave her more words when she was talking to her, to her sister's head. Whoops. I also, in terms of, and this is, you know, we'll be talking about endings much later in the season. Mm-hmm. But the last line was originally considered the best spot for a hero.
Mm.
And then I was like, that's not her relationship with her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beloved sister feels so much more the core of the emotion of the story, right?
Yeah.
There's such a tenderness to her too, you know, and I think you do a good job of showing that early, you know, both in terms of we think of that as somebody doing these nurturing tasks, preparing food, gardening, but also just like her relationship with her like awful little cilia covered pet who's like so adorable, but also when I think about it, I'm like, I don't want a million legs making biscuits on me. That's so bad to think about. But also you made it very sweet and very cute and very tender, right? Yeah,
I love Butterscotch.
Yeah, I agree. That was an insanely good character moment too. And like, although it was a little off-putting, like she loves this awful little creature. And I love that last line, that section, they like frolicking in the moss. And I'm like thinking of this thing with all these legs, like doing this. I was like, okay, I'm glad she likes that, but that sounds awful, but okay.
Listen, I'm sorry you missed the pantomime. Yeah.
I'm like, is that a thousand little legs or is that a marionette moment? I'm not sure what's happening over there. Cool.
I have a question for you. I know we don't have endless amounts of time, but you talked about feeling like you were leveling up, and I'm curious, like, what that felt like to you, and like, how did you feel that? What specifically did you feel like you were able to do that you weren't before?
So, I know that, I've had control over delay of information for a while, but this kind of slow reveal in such a compressed space. Mm. That felt like something that, like, I know I couldn't have done that when I started writing. And I'm not even sure that I would have been, like, 5 years ago doing that. Mm. I'm not certain, but I felt like the feeling that I had really was, oh, I know how to do this. And one of the things that it wasn't actually that I know how to do this. Oh, I've internalized this. Mm. That was the thing. When I've done this before, it has been a very, very conscious thing where I've had to think about it and I've had to tweak and adjust it. And this time it was, oh, I have internalized how to handle that. And that's, I think, part of why I described the story as, like, I just coughed and this story happened, that I was chasing the feelings and the emotions that I had in that moment. It's very short for people who have not read it. It's only 1,700 words. So it was something that I could write, it mostly write in one sitting, which meant that I was kind of in the same headspace for the entire time. So it really did feel like that thing I always talk about with puppetry where, like, I've internalized it, the figure is just moving. And often when I was performing, I would remember the show from the point of view of the character, even though that's not like my body is not in that memory, even though I know that I was there, but I had internalized what I was supposed to be doing so much that I was just acting and living the moment. Mm-hmm. And that was very much that feeling with this. It's like, I've internalized this. I'm just acting. I'm just feeling the moment, which was really good feeling.
There's a real ease to the story that comes through, right? It doesn't feel effortful or forced in any way. Not that your fiction normally does, but like there's a breeziness to it that I think makes it so appealing and easy to read.
Yeah, it was I think that can happen with my other stuff, but often it's something that I had to really work for and like polish off the rough edges. And this time it was like, no, I know exactly what I'm doing with this one, which was a nice feeling.
It's awesome.
And I know we're not talking about revision really right now, but like that's something good I think for, like, in my writing community where a lot of new writers or aspiring writers or however you want to call it are trying to figure out, is this ready? You know what I mean? And so I guess I like hearing the fact that you were able to do this, but this isn't something that happens all the time, but it's also something that will happen the more you do it.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a question there, but like, do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I think it absolutely is a thing to know, and that, because you're right, it is so frustrating when you are working for it. And I see that also a lot with people who've just taken a writing workshop, that they come out of it and everything is so conscious that writing feels incredibly hard because you're trying to do everything, you know, trying to use all of these new tools.
Right.
And so knowing that, oh yeah, once you do that work, there is this payoff on the other side. Yeah. It just may take years before you get there.
Yeah.
It's all practice.
Yeah. Like I, I sold my first story, I think, in 2005. Mm. I think that's right. I started
so just a couple years ago.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So, you know, I'm about 20 years into doing this as a career, which is, woof, yeah. I've not actually said that out loud before. one of the other things that I was going to say is that when I was writing this, we also took a couple of breaks. So even though it's a 2-hour span that I wrote this in, I know that I took a couple of breaks during that in which I walked around, and the breaks were only 2 minutes long, which is long enough to go get a cup of water, long enough for things to kind of kick over in my head, and then come back. So like one of the things that I've got in here is, in the original is a prompt that I used when we came back, which is after she took a face mask out of another drawer and hooked it around her ears. And I preserved the prompt, which was, what the hell? And originally, like in my, you know, and again, like this is a 2-hour span. I know that I was planning on, like, I was thinking about how many iterations, how much back and forth. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, what the hell? Have him just show up. Mm-hmm. Like he just shows yeah. up and she's yeah. like, what yeah. the hell?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, forget all of this. And that was also one of those things that, that again, the internalizing of, oh, sometimes you can't actually just make a yeah. decision to stop a try-fail cycle and just move to the next beat. Like yeah. you don't have to like build. Sometimes you can just be like, what the hell?
Yeah.
This is happening now? And just, yeah. and just move.
Yeah. I love that.
Okay. Any other questions before I give them their homework?
No.
No.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you all so much for coming to celebrate my birthday.
Happy birthday.
With me.
Happy birthday. Thank you. Thank you for sharing this with
yes.
me.
Yes. Awesome. I love getting presents on somebody else's birthday.
So, for your homework, this story started with a description of emotion, angry snakes. I want you to take a strong emotion that you've experienced recently and describe it as a metaphor. Then I want you to use that metaphor as your writing prompt.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends.
Your hosts for this episode were Mary Robinette Kowal, Don Juan Song, Marshall Carr Jr., and Aaron Roberts.
This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.